Good morning. I'm Sarah Goldman. I'm the Director of Global and Local Impact and Allocations for the Dallas Federation. So, good morning. Today, I'm excited to tell you about a program that re-energized the Dallas Jewish community's support for the Israel and Overseas case. For the past 10 years, our community, like many of yours, has grappled with the same issue. How do we advocate for those over there when we have pressing needs right here at home? Well, 2 years ago, we began planning a mission, knowing that if we didn't take our community to see, touch, and feel our work abroad, that they would never understand what we as Federation do for Jews around the world. The big one, community mission to Israel with a pre-mission to Budapest, was the first mission of a renewed missions department. Our goal was simple, and I know that many of us share these goals, was to provide a first-class Israel experience, to energize current and emerging leadership, and connect people in a meaningful way with the Jewish Agency, JDC, and our partnership region. What we did with the big one not only set the bar for future Dallas travel missions, but I also believe it's replicable and unique because of our focus on three key elements. Finding a tour operator that was a strong partner for our mission, for our vision in the mission, creating a first-class experience from start to finish, and attention to the follow-through plan. All across Dallas, affectionately known as the Big D, we have these B and G letters that let you stand in the middle, take pictures, and be the I. We leveraged our branding, the city's branding, for our benefit, and had a set of BG letters to build momentum and help with recruitment. Big, with Israel at the center, became the mantra for our planning. When you dream ideas, you want a partner who dreams with you and figures out how to get things done and doesn't put obstacles in your way. Giant Leaps flawlessly executed our logistics and pushed our dreams beyond imagine. It was this trusted relationship that created a desire to take risks and pull out all the stops. Having a partner like this was crucial in our planning. We had a thought partner who pushed ideas further than we imagined possible, and they enhanced every aspect of the itinerary, and most important, that they took time to understand what our community values and what distinguishes it. This formula enables you to work together to bring the mission vision to life and achieve your intended goals. The mission ended almost a year ago, and yet if you ask participants about the trip, their faces still light up. We traveled across the country by private train to our partnership region. We dined in Knights Hall, a UNESCO World Heritage Site in Akko, with our partnership friends and dignitaries. And we closed our mission with Shimon Peres. But these specifics are going to fade over time, but what will shine is the overall first-class experience that we built for our mission participants. We identified high-impact, low-cost opportunities from start to finish. The mission began at registration and still hasn't stopped almost a year later. We built our branding and established a standard for our communication to make our participants feel like their own cohort and build their anticipation for the mission. No detail was too small and no idea too crazy if it made the experience better for those going. You can see examples including the giveaway at our mandatory orientation and mini mission, participant amenity kits to feel comfortable on their flights, and personalized departure packets that included custom confirmation pages as well as customized itineraries that listed tracks and other special notations. A little mantra that we embraced was that after the mission, we'd have two types of Jews in Dallas, those who went on the big one and those who wish they had. We did everything possible to make our participants feel like they were part of something special. Some of our sparkle included text messages on the way to the airport, branded hotel keys, branded chocolate, Shabbat cookies, and so much more, that by the time we got to our closing, our participants wondered where our balloon arches were because the room always felt special and it felt unique. It felt like all of Israel knew that Dallas was in town and that they were a part of something big. While the specifics will change depending on the type of mission, investing in our community, considering the smallest of details, and communication all enhance the mission experience. It'll be a while before we know the true lasting impact, but we've already seen signs of the big one's success. Right after the mission, participants had the date of the reunion and participated in a post-mission survey, which looked beyond questions of the food and if wake-up was too early, which often it was. The survey included understanding Federation's impact both before and after the trip, areas of Federation's work to get involved in after, and desired locations for future missions. I'm happy to report that all of the data confirmed that the mission was a success. Another post-mission highlight was that our Federation saw an increase to Israel and Overseas Corps funding this year due to our caucus, which raised $350,000 with a 74% card-for-card increase, which bucks both the local and the national trends, which are trending down. Our Israel and Overseas Committee took the increased funds and decided to designate it to select projects of the Jewish Agency and JDC. We've long been connected to the Budapest Jewish community and wanted to select programs there to fund. Our Israel and Overseas Committee set the criteria, but it was our pre-mission participants to Budapest who, as subject matter experts having visited those organizations, made the final funding decision. Not only do we engage these participants in a significant way, but we also learned that their Federation never expected us to include and empower them. Through this approach, we changed perceptions and quieted stigmas of our organization and were able to increase our support for a community that we hold dear. There's a famous travel quote that says, "You don't take the trip takes you." Yet what we learn and will use as a model for future missions is that with attention to engaging our partners in planning as well as our participants, you can build a framework for that trip yet still be surprised by its magic every step along the way.
While they're figuring out the technology, and I'm really glad it's me for finally that hasn't screwed it up. I want to introduce myself. I'm Mark Friedman. I'm the executive director of the Jewish Federation of Nashville and Middle Tennessee. And what you just saw from Dallas, which was a wonderful, wonderful trip. I'm glad you. How many people did you have? 150. Okay. Now I'm going to show you something completely different. And we'll see if the technology is still working. So there you go. Nashville, I'm on here? Okay, very good. What we did in Nashville, you know, we're in the buckle of the Bible Belt in Tennessee. And not only are we in the buckle of the Bible Belt, we are the little hole in the belt that's exactly in the middle. And we've had wonderful relationships with evangelicals in Nashville. We've accompanied them on trips to Israel. But one of the concerns that we always have had is that we didn't really have particularly strong relationships with what we call the mainline Christian community. So as you can see on the screen, is this thing working? Okay. Can everybody hear me okay? Okay. We decided that we wanted to work with the Nashville mainline Christian community, and we've got tons of churches in Nashville. There are just, you know, there's one literally on every block. And our expected outcomes in this trip were for the clergy that went on this trip, when they came back, to be able to engage with their own communities in terms of Israel advocacy and telling the other side of this story that their churches don't particularly promote. And also to help them better understand the political and security concerns that Israel has in terms of its relationships with the Palestinians, both Muslim and Christian. Because many of them heard stories about the Christian population in Israel, most of which was not true. Why did we do it? Also, an issue that's on everybody's agenda lately, the BDS movement, to dive down into that a little bit more deeply so that they could understand the implications and the issues that the Jewish community has in fighting the BDS movement. So this is not a bar joke. We had one Episcopalian, two Methodists, two Presbyterian, one non-evangelical Baptist, two Disciples of Christ, and a Unitarian Universalist. So nine mainline Christian clergy came, and they're scattered among that beautiful shot that we have there. And again, why did we do it? We wanted to reinforce for them and explore with them the democratic and pluralistic nature of the Jewish state. Who went from the Federation, from the Jewish community? again, Federation President, myself, the Community Relations Chair, the Community Relations Director, the Chair of our Grants Committee that helped fund the program, the Senior Rabbi of a Reformed congregation, and something critically important, we brought a moderator facilitator with us so that at the end of each day, we debriefed in formal sessions with established agendas to be able to talk through what they experienced each day.
What kind of
from the Jewish community. And I'll answer that more in the Q&A session because I want to be fair to all our other panelists here. How is it funded? We had a grant for the Christian clergy. They still had to put some skin in the game. My trip and the CRC director covered by the Federation operating budget. All the Federation volunteers paid their own expenses, and the congregational rabbi from his budget, he also supported the moderator facilitator. So how much did it cost? $4,400 per person. Okay, four nights in Jerusalem, two nights up in the north near many of the Christian sites, one night in Tel Aviv. And I want to recognize my friends from Da'at back there, David Magan and the gang. They did an incredible job. And Doron Wilfun, our guide, was absolutely wonderful. Really relates well and knows the Christian Bible probably better than some of the participants on the trip from the Christian clergy. And there's another little promotional thing for Da'at, they really did a tremendous job. Where do we go? In and around Jerusalem. During the Q&A, we can talk more about the different sites that we visited. Just wanted you to get a flavor for where we went in and around in Jerusalem. And, well, this is great. I'll talk more about that later. Only in Israel do you see this juxtaposition of T-shirts. Really wonderful. The Israeli police right next to Arafat. Throughout Jerusalem in Bethlehem, we spent a full day in Bethlehem, in front of the refugee camp in Bethlehem. We were at a Kfar Adamim settlement, met with some residents there. And then when we headed to the north, here's a list of the sites that we visited in the north and when we concluded the trip in Tel Aviv. I'm just showing you, it's like my family album here. Here's one of the Disciples of Christ ministers in the Jordan River. Capernaum. Now, this is something that breaks a guide's heart to see a sign like this. How they can restrain themselves from not talking wherever they go, but Doron managed. Right on the border with Syria, Golan Heights, finishing up in Tel Aviv. Who did we meet with? A wide range of individuals in various fields and disciplines. What you will notice there, no politicians. Okay, we tried very hard in this trip to reflect the views of Israelis by not talking to politicians. I'll tell you what, it was wonderful. It was a lot easier to schedule things. There were a lot easier conversations and lots of good debate afterwards. Paul Lipst, Rachel Corazim, Hannah Bunkowski. This, by the way, incredible presentation by Benzi Gruber about military ethics, the things that Israelis have to confront in the IDF when they're dealing with the Palestinians. Rami Nizal, by the way, those of you that do read the New York Times, Rami has been writing for them recently. This is the Pardes Institute. We spent a half day at Pardes talking about the biblical roots of modern Zionism. Jamie Salter, another wonderful guide, by the way, led this session. We literally could not get the ministers out of Pardes. They wanted to stay for the whole day. Our settler friend, Batya Cohn at Kfar Adamim. Zahar Shahavi, very important person, founder, executive director of IsraAid. If you want to show the global reach of Israel in helping in disasters and all kinds of issues and going to places where you would never suspect Israel to have a presence, this is the fellow to talk to. So, did we meet with success in accomplishing our goals? Early indicators, yes. Two clergy at our annual meeting, one who labeled the BDS movement obscene, okay? Another who was prepared and did go to the National Conference of the Episcopalians, ready to speak out against the BDS resolution. It was withdrawn just as literally she was walking up to the microphone. We had two clergy join us in opposing the Iran nuclear agreement. Two of the clergy hosted a meeting with Benzi Gruber when he came to the United States last month and was in our community. The combined number of church members of these nine churches, 15,000, okay? And one of the gentlemen on the trip was the head of the Presbyterian ministry for all of Middle Tennessee with 100 churches and over 75,000 members. So this is the potential reach that these ministers and clergy have in speaking to their communities about what they saw and what they learned. Okay? Each of them has already preached about their experience. Over the next couple of months, we will be publishing their accounts in our own Jewish newspaper. They're speaking at Sunday gatherings, and Rachel Karzim, wonderful Holocaust educator, will be speaking at several of the churches when she comes to Israel, to the United States in Nashville around Yom HaShoah. So, would we do another mission with more members of the mainline Christian clergy? The answer is yes, and we hope to find the funding to be able to do that. Prior to the trip, we each asked each of the nine to describe Israel in one word. This is one of the things our great moderator did for us. Here are the words they gave us after the trip. Just take a look. So after a week together, a consensus did emerge about the situation of Israel. This was kind of our theme all the way along the line. It's complicated. But we believe that they have a better understanding of the situation on the ground in Israel. We believe we have many new friends in Nashville that we never had before, and we're just so glad we did this trip, and we're so glad that you listened to me this morning. Thank you very much.
Yep, I'm good. Hi, everybody. I'm Jody Heimler. I'm the Managing Director of Development at the Jewish Federation of Northern New Jersey. Jersey strong? Any Jersey in the house? Yay. Okay. Okay. Getting the most out of your Federation mission. Why travel with Federation? For many years, our Federation had a robust missions program, but unfortunately, after the economic downturn, missions took a backseat to other programming. However, I'm very happy to report that our leadership has realized that missions are an essential part of the FRD toolbox. There's nothing like a Federation mission to connect people to the work that we do. I think we'd all agree there's no better way to see the Jewish world than on a Federation mission. Federation missions are so much more than just a sightseeing trip. We offer an active, immersive experience that participants couldn't or wouldn't do on their own. For example, Cuba, left-hand corner up there. There's no way to get to Cuba without going with an organization that obtains a license for a religious-oriented trip or a people-to-people mission. Only Federation can make that happen. This past April, we had our women's philanthropy mission to Poland and Israel, and one of our co-chairs asked if we could arrange to participate on Yom HaShoah with the March of the Living organization and be able to march from Auschwitz to Birkenau. Well, we were able to partner with that organization. We made it happen, and our small group of 22 was able to join with the 10,000 other participants on March of the Living on that extremely powerful and meaningful walk from Auschwitz to Birkenau. Again, something that participants couldn't do on their own. And then just about 10 days ago, I returned from our major gifts mission to Morocco. We had 26 major donors with us, and one evening we had the opportunity to have dinner with the U.S. ambassador to Morocco, along with the only Jewish advisor to the king. That evening at dinner happened to take place the same evening that the UNESCO resolution regarding the Temple Mount was announced, and Morocco was part of that coalition. You can imagine it was an extremely lively conversation with our invited guests, but extremely meaningful as well. I also wanted to touch on why our Federation feels it's really important to put emphasis on our gender-based missions. We do separate missions for men and women. Why? Well, at the risk of sounding, politically incorrect or whatever, you know, girls like to do girly things and guys like to do guy things, and we can make that happen. It's true. The women wouldn't necessarily want to go to a military operations site and shoot guns. Maybe some would, I don't know. And I don't know, the guys really might not be that interested in going to the Mesquite fashion house and, you know, try on clothes and go shopping. So I know it sounds stereotypical, but it's true. We can provide the kind of programming that really has great appeal to each of the genders. But, you know, more seriously, the kind of networking and the kind of bonding that takes place on those kind of separate gender-based missions are really something that can't be replaced and replicated. Also, when you have separate missions for men and women, it lowers the barriers for anyone who may not have a partner and might not feel so comfortable going on a quote-unquote couples mission. The bonding that takes place on those missions really, really cannot be beat. And we plan on doing more and more separate men's and women's missions. So what are our keys to success? First and foremost, we work really closely with our lay leaders to be sure that everyone is matched up with somebody that's been on a prior mission. Especially those participants that have never been on a mission before. We want to make sure they're connected on our site visits and they have a greater understanding of why we're taking them to see these particular sites. Of course, we have everybody matched up to have a meaningful solicitation, a meaningful Jewish conversation. The follow-up is key, it's essential. We make sure that we're constantly in touch with all of the participants, sending them articles of interest, making sure they're invited to programs that would be of particular interest to them. We organize, for example, at our Women's Spring Luncheon, we had a couple of tables that were reserved for the mission participants. At our mitzvah day that we just had a couple of weeks ago, we had specific sites that were designed for our mission participants. We want to keep them all together and keep them engaged with Federation. And the proof is in the numbers. On our men's mission, we had a 35% gift-for-gift increase. Our women's mission had a 17% gift-for-gift increase. And of all the participants that went on these missions, 75% of them, three-quarters of them, are now serving on a Federation committee or on a board. Finally, I just wanted to talk about the lessons learned. What's clear to us is it's all about having the right leadership in place. You have to have the right chairs who are pulling from their own circles from throughout the community. We have to make sure we work with the right trip provider, and we can talk about that a little bit later on in the Q&A. And we have to make sure everything is planned from soup to nuts, planning over and over and over again, going over the itinerary. And then when hiccups occur and you know that they're going to happen, you throw it all out and you just go with the flow because that's what has to happen. Missions are hard work. We all know it. They take a great deal of staff time, not to mention the time that you're out of the office. But they're an essential investment, and they prove to us that we must continue investing in missions and making sure that they are something that the participants could never, ever experience on their own. Thank you.
Good morning. I'm Sue Linzer, Associate Director of Planning and Director of Overseas Operations for the Jewish Federation of Greater Pittsburgh. This morning, I'll be sharing with you Pittsburgh's successful centennial mega mission of 2012, the challenges that we faced, four strategies that were employed that can be replicated, and our achieved outcomes. Since 1995, partnership has successfully created a living bridge between Pittsburgh and Carmel Misgav in the Central Galilee of Israel. We've invested in adult and youth Kesher initiatives, our people-to-people initiatives, and regional development projects. We like to think of Carmel and Misgav as Pittsburgh's address in Israel. The goals of the Centennial Mission, like any community mission, were to strengthen engagement, build future leadership, and increase philanthropic giving. What makes this mission unique is that there was a strategic decision of Federation senior management and lay leadership to spend the first 2.5 days of the community mission in Carmel and Miscav. There was a strong desire to use the partnership experience to deepen missions participants' understanding of and connection to Israel. 290 mission participants ranged from first-timers to senior Federation leadership and included extended families and young adults. Pittsburgh received the Jewish Agency Award of Excellence in 2013 for the Welcome Home Program, which is the 2.5 days in our partnership region that I will be sharing with you today. I'm now going to introduce the 4 strategies that were proved to be effective and can be replicated in your community. Home hospitality is a hallmark in our partnership, and we all know it's a challenge to create meaningful engagement with 290 mission participants. So a people mapping strategy was designed and implemented. The term was coined by our partnership co-chair at the time. An interest survey was developed and distributed to all of Pittsburgh mission participants to gather the following information. What was their relationship with Israel, and specifically to Carmel and Miscav? Had their children ever been to Israel or participated in any of our partnership programs? Had they hosted someone from Carmel Miscav in their home? As well as a collection of personal data, their profession, their marital status, their hobbies and interests, volunteer experiences, and their Hebrew language skills. A partnership adult Kesher committee of 20 committee members was put in place in our partnership region to filter these survey results. Each category grouping was responsible for identifying individuals and families to match with our mission participants. Israeli P2G committee members understood that they had to commit to participating in the full 2.5 days of activities. This was not just the festive dinners, but also the site visits and the volunteer opportunities in our region. The first communication from Carmel and Miscav to our Pittsburgh participants was approximately 6 weeks in advance of the mission. In collaboration with Giant Leaps, our wonderful trip provider, and our P2G professionals and leadership, site visits were determined with intentionality so that there was something of interest for all of our participants, whether it be a ride on our P2G bike trail, which was part of a master tourism initiative, or a visit to Yod Fat, a national heritage site, which served as the location of the headquarters of the Jewish revolt in the Galilee. Also, nonprofits that are supported by our self-directed overseas funding process were considered. A kibbutz that serves at-risk youth, a home for life for special needs adults at Kisharit, and the Galilee Hand-in-Hand School, a bilingual and multicultural educational program that serves our partnership. In order to ensure that this education was uniform for all of our mission participants, a comprehensive talking points were prepared for all of the bus captains and mission staff to ensure that mission participants were learning about the history of our partnership, current partnership supported projects, as well as our self-directed overseas grants that support the nonprofits to strengthen the region of Carmel and Miscav. I encourage all of you to find something very unique about your partnership and an innovative way to bring it home to your local community. For Pittsburgh, this was very easy in the sense that Carmel is famous for its annual International Dance Festival. We asked the Carmel Cultural Department staff to choreograph the Hebrew song, Come Say Hello, Bo Tagid Shalom. A video was posted on YouTube, and a dance instructor in Pittsburgh used that video to teach all of our mission participants the dance so that we could all participate in the flash mob. I wish I had time to show you the video, but I encourage you to go online to YouTube, look up Carmel Flash Mob, and I think you'll see just how exciting this was. The flash mob is now a part of the collective memory of the Pittsburgh Carmel Miscav partnership. So how do we measure success? These were the areas I mentioned, engagement, leadership, and philanthropy. So let's take a look at the numbers. You can see 170 adults participated in terms of engagement. Many of them participated in family reunions and bus reunions. Many of the 290 participants on the mission were also extended family members coming from outside the city. In terms of leadership, yes, in all fairness, there are 90 that are serving in leadership roles. Some of those were already senior leadership who participated in the mission. So I wanted to focus this morning on those who have come forward to serve in the overseas area. So we have 7 new P2G committee members, 3 new on the Overseas Funding Committee, and 1 new on the Israel Scholarship Committee. in terms of philanthropy. I think it's significant, 33 new donors, 4 new major donors, 5 new Lions of Judah, 19 new $1,000 plus donors, and a 15.57% increase in annual campaign gifts. So I've been involved in partnership for 20 years, personally and professionally. We're celebrating P2G at 20, April 4th to 7th in Tel Aviv with the Jewish Agency. Carmiel is on the track in the north on April 5th, so I hope that you all join us and have a chance to see our very special partnership. If you want more information, please feel free to ask during the Q&A, or our contact information is above. Thank you.
Okay, I think the technology is working. First of all, welcome to Washington. I am very excited to welcome all of you to our hometown of Washington, D.C. I'm Avital Ingber, and I am the Chief Development Officer and Managing Director of the United Jewish Endowment Fund at the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington. So as the fifth person presenting on missions, I'm going to try to actually get you the feeling of being on a mission by showing you the video, because we just heard from 4 exceptional colleagues about missions, about all the great things it does. Apparently technology, there's some phantom here because I'm not pressing anything and it just keeps moving slides, so I apologize for it going back and forth, but we're going to try and make it work. So as you heard from other communities, when there was an economic downturn, a lot of communities, it just keeps going by itself. No, but this is the slide. Okay, perfect. So when there was an economic downturn, a lot of communities had to make a change and stop having, we're just gonna leave it there, and stop having missions in the way that they used to. And Washington was one of those communities. We used to have a very robust missions department. You ask any of our leaders who are on our executive committee, on our board, how they got involved with Federation, and 85-90% of them will tell you it's because they went on a mission. No idea what the phantom is. But anyways, so in 2012, we in Washington said we need to bring back missions. But we need to bring back missions in a very different way. And we need to bring back missions in the way that we're doing every single other thing in our federation, which in our federation, our branding is make it yours. Everything is about whatever you want to do. And Israel was exactly the same way. Israel, your way. We recognized that people could go to Israel anytime they want. They could get a plane ticket. They could get a tour guide. They could go tour around. But they could not see Israel in a very unique way. And so the idea of Israel, your way was born. We started partnering with DOT, who you heard a shout out before from Nashville with. We started partnering with them in 2012 for our first ever Israel, your way mission in 2013. And I just got back less than a week ago from Israel Your Way 2015. In the height of everything happening in Israel, we had 125 people come on our mission. Only 2 people canceled. And we had our info session on the night, Wednesday night, that was the craziest day in Jerusalem. And I was sitting in my spin bike that morning in my head saying, nobody is coming on this mission. We've just worked for 2 years and no one is coming. But what you saw is, this wasn't a solidarity mission. No one signed up for a solidarity mission. But because we have a community that is now, that is continuously rallied around Israel, and they were going to see Israel in a very unique, different way, they were already a community before they left, and everyone said, that's it, we're going. And as you heard from Jody before, we had to make a lot of changes. DOT was an exceptional partner in making changes, even though we had all of these things that we had planned for 2 years. We had to make changes. But we showed up as a community, and everywhere we went, people said thank you. And people went as even individuals, maybe even a little bit as a community, but came back a family. And the uniqueness of Israel Your Way is we had 8 different itineraries happening at once. You had first timers, and you had people that have homes in Israel, but yet are going on an organized trip on a mission. And the best part about it is that it's multi-generational. So we had people in their 20s, all the way up to people in their 80s. And I think that's the unique part about Israel Your Way. So I'll give you more of the details later, but for now I'm gonna try to show you the video.
down, he swooped down, he broke the chains, and this big monster comes out.
It's a real question about what the position of non-Jewish nationals
is. Four barrels of wine, so what do you
think? Yeah. No? You can get it there?
All right, so hopefully in 2 minutes you felt a little bit like you were in Israel, but not the Israel that I went to when I was 12 years old for the first time. And what we've done with this mission is you saw business, you saw food and culture, you saw Eco Outdoor, you saw the kids and understanding issues of what's happening inside Israel. And so people get to show up and people get to say, you know, if they've been to Israel 25 times and really usually go and they meet with politicians and they dig down the issues and it's heavy and it's complicated, and they really want to go on a trip where they just get to experience the culture, mostly, you know, around Tel Aviv in the center of the country, but also you learn about the social businesses happening that's making the culture in the way that it is, they can. If they want to dig into the issues and understand what it means to live in southern Israel, to live on the Gaza border, to understand what it's like to live with Israeli Arabs as your neighbors, they can do that. You want to understand business and make business deals and invest in Israel, you can do all of those things, and you do it in the way that our community is here, which is multi-generational. And so what has worked for us is the uniqueness of, you saw, a very large leadership team. We have two couples, a couple in their 30s and a couple in their 60s as our overall chairs, and then every track has between two and four leaders. So you have a large leadership team, you have great recruitment, you have a great professional staff team, you have a great partner in DOT, you have an itinerary that people want to do, and the most important thing is that we come back in one community and we have follow-up. And I will tell you something radical about our mission. We do not solicit people on the ground in Israel. And I repeat, we do not solicit people on the ground in Israel. It's very rare, I know, but we have seen $150,000 in new money from our 2013 mission from 70 participants, and it's only growing. We've seen 30% more involvement from people in the community. And so for us, it's working. We're bringing them to Israel. We're letting them connect to Israel. We're letting them experience what community is all about. They're learning about Federation, the things that we invest in Israel. We still do site visits, but it's not a traditional site visit. It might be biking with kids and helping them to build different bikes because you're on an Eco Outdoor track. It might be visiting the coolest place in Tel Aviv because it was funded by the Jewish Agency Loan Fund. And so all of that happens, and then we come back. And we just got back, and our staff team is now going out in the next 60 days and meeting one-on-one with every single participant to talk about what do they want to be involved with, what are they going to give. And so we're really looking at it as a long-term strategy for engaging these people. So we're happy to answer any questions. I think we're all going to come back up and move into Q&A. So thank you.
Okay, if our participants would come on up. If you have questions, please line up at the mics so that we can make sure everybody hears. Is there anyone who'd like to ask a question of any of our participants?
I'm Bill Franklin from Reading, Pennsylvania. How long in advance do you start planning the mission, and specifically, Mark, for your interfaith mission? How long did it take to get the community together? Thank you.
We, the for those of you that just have come into the room, I want to thank you first for attending. I spoke about a mainline Christian clergy mission, and we got the funding for that trip in October of last year. We started recruiting the clergy members through the late fall and early winter, and the trip actually departed at the end of May. So we had about a 4 or 5 month ramp up time. But we knew that, you know, unlike a big community mission, and you've heard several of them here today, we have one going next March where we already have 75 people signed up, and that's been, you know, a 2 year project to bring that to fruition.
Mark, as a follow up, I wanted to know, since Christian clergy are a dime a dozen in Tennessee, how did you choose people to recruit, or how did you go about picking who it was you wound up with?
Yeah, I worked very closely with my partner, the senior rabbi at the Reformed Congregation, the Temple, Mark Shifton. He had some existing relationships through a local clergy group, but we also did spend quite a bit of time targeting clergy who had significantly large constituents. We were looking, as I showed in the one slide, the total outreach of the 9 that participated in the trip, you know, some 90,000 regular constituents covering 110 different churches.
I would just add, we did a community mission. We started planning in October for January, so it was 15 months. It was a little quick. But we were able to do it successfully. But I think somewhere in the 18 to 20 months down to, I think, 15 for a community mission. But definitely the time invested, I think more is better.
Can any of you all participate in that question? I think it's really important.
Our community mission, because it was so large and it was within the framework of a year of celebration of our centennial year, it was an 18-month planning process, and it was an organizational effort. So we were all involved.
And on our missions that were smaller in nature, I would say we started at least a year out. You need that time. And it also brings the mission leadership together and invests them in the process, which is really important, because we also had chairs that really hadn't been that involved in Federation before. So it also was an opportunity to engage them and educate them. So that year-long process is really essential.
So the first year that we did our Israel Your Way mission, we had our first recruitment event in January. Our first meeting to even think about the mission was in November, and we went the following October. So we had about 8 months to do it the first time. We now do it on a 2 year cycle. So it can be done much shorter. It is much better if you do it in 2 years. We're already developing our plans for 2017. We already have people ready to sign up for 2017. And I call it the 6, 12, and 18 month rule. There are people that plan a year and a half out, and there are people that look at you like you're crazy. And so you go in waves, and when you're working on a 2 year cycle, you have the people that want to sign up a year and a half out, the people that want to sign up a year out. And if you don't sell out, you have the people that will sign up 6 months or even 2 months before they go.
If you come up to the mic, Michelle, would you mind? Thank you.
Can you talk about subsidies and then what requirements you have for gifts?
In Northern New Jersey, we did not offer any subsidies on any of our missions.
So we subsidize only for young adults. People who are pretty much under age 35 and under. Our mission costs $3,600 plus airfare, and we subsidize the young adults so that they pay $2,000 plus airfare. We raised the subsidy money from other participants who were going on the mission. When people signed up and registered, one of the questions was, do you want to add an extra $1,800 to your mission cost to subsidize young adults? And we were able to cover, I think, 17 young adults in that way. And then we also, at the same time, have a Birthright Alumni Leadership Program, which is a whole separate program but part of Israel Your Way. And for that, we get a donor to give $75,000. But everyone who is not a young adult pays their full cost.
We did it a little bit differently on our community mission. It was the first in a renewed missions department, so we had to prove ourselves. The pricing overall was $24.95 per person. We as Federation subsidized down to that $24.95, about $600 a person, raising the money from donors and from people who were traveling on the mission. We also had 60 first-timers participate on the community mission, and had a separate fund that provided a $1,000 subsidy for each of them to go on their first Israel experience. We lastly subsidized both young adults as well as community rabbis. And we had 10 rabbis and a number of young adults with us on the trip.
For the clergy mission, as I mentioned in the presentation, we subsidized about $3,000 of their participation, only the clergy. They paid another $1,500 for the cost of the trip. Going outside of that particular trip in the past, the GA mission 2 years ago, we subsidized the cost of those that attended the GA. The mission that we have coming up in March, we are covering the cost of the rabbis who will be participating on the mission, and those that are staying on for the Partnership Together 20th anniversary celebration, we're subsidizing their participation for that. And in the past, it really depends on the particular mission. Aside from the specific missions, we have an ongoing grant from our Federation that provides subsidies for young leaders and emerging leaders to participate on a variety of trips, both to Israel. We've done subsidies for Cuba and Eastern Europe.
The mission cost for our mega mission was $39.99. We had 50 subsidies available for young adults at $2,000, and we used all 50 of those subsidies. There was a minimum giving requirement of $500 per year for 2 years.
Did everybody?
Where did you get the money for your clergy, for your Christian clergy, to subsidize?
Okay. Everybody hear the question?
He asked, where did we get the money? It was a grant from the Federation. We have something called the New Initiatives Fund, and we submitted this grant under that particular area for Israel advocacy and education. So the funding came from that resource fund. We funded, I believe, 11 different grants out of this particular round of new initiatives. There was a pool of $50,000 that was available.
How much did the Christian clergy have to pay?
$1,500.
Can I ask a question?
Sure. For its effect?
For its effect, for doing it, et cetera.
Okay.
Okay.
I have a follow-up to that.
Do you want to ask your follow-up first, and then
sure.
We can answer both?
I got very interested. We go to Israel quite a few times, and I think there are a lot of chefs in Israel, and there's a lot of good wine. And I really try to do sort of get this started in St. Louis, but we really need some partner. Because of the fact that you see these chefs that are not only in the United States, but many of them have already come from Israel. And I thought it would be really neat to have some kind of a mission which pairs the wine and the chefs and do some kind of an interesting trip with that. Especially, and I know that there have been some wine trips, but I'm not sure that they were real combinations. And first, I didn't know how many people you would need to be on that trip.
Okay, let me go ahead and answer that quick question
Thanks,
for you real
Dana.
Quick. Immediately after this meeting is over, go see Ronit. All right? She is the guru of food in Israel. I can personally attest to it. No, seriously, please go speak with her about the kind of trip that you're contemplating.
By the way,
I agree with that answer. But I'll also answer your first part, which is that the answer is it depends. It depends what your goals are. It depends what you're trying to achieve. You know, if one of your goals is about building community, then you need to make sure you have the right number of people. For a trip outside of Israel, a group of 15 or 25 people might be the right number of people. Sometimes there's family trips that you do where there's 6 or 8 people, and that's the right thing. So it really depends what your goals are, and I would say you would need to talk to Ronit or your individual federation to figure out what are you trying to achieve, how much do you want it to cost, and therefore then what do you want it to be. So for us, even though we take 125 people on a mission, the selling point for us is we're taking very high-end people that don't like to travel in groups, and we promise them that there will be no more than 25 people per bus. If a track gets the 25 people, it's sold out and no one else can sign up. And we had people that wanted to go on our business track, but it was sold out, and so they had to pick another track. And that's really the selling point, even though it's something larger. So it really just depends.
I would lastly add that each federation will determine a set number, usually in looking at the budget. I feel every federation has a responsibility not only to provide a great experience, but also to keep our participants and our community members in mind. So if a trip is 7 days, figuring out what that right number is, like that sweet spot of what people will pay. When it's less people, obviously the costs go up. So it's about the tour operator relationship so that you can work together and find a good number. But we've taken groups as small as 5 or 6, as well as up to 150 people. So there's a balance. Most often, we've done anywhere from 8 to 18 recently.
I agree with everything my distinguished colleagues have said.
Nina.
I'm in Jody's New Jersey, Nina Kampler, in Jody's New Jersey group, and Jody put together a Morocco trip last week, and it was stellar. It was flawless, honey. Thank you. During the Gaza War, there were a lot of missions coming from all the shuls and all the schools and all the everythings, and I turned to my husband, who's been our Federation president, I turned to our CEO, Jason Chavez, and I said, the mission from us. Get me 10 people and we're in. I got us 10 people. We'll work together with Jody very closely. We got 10 people. We were in. Most of half the trip was major donors. The other half were people who just showed up out of the woodwork, some of whom have turned into now significant donors at Morocco, hosting the Morocco reunion. So I think some of those very small groups convert a lot of new people.
Thanks, Nina. That's exactly what I was going to say. No, but it's true. You know, especially when we go outside of Israel, not going to Israel. Those smaller, more intimate trips, when we planned our Morocco mission, we were capping it at 30, no more than 30. You don't want to have too large a group. It's unwieldy. It's just like my colleagues have said before, it just doesn't make for a cohesive group. But it truly depends on the trip and what your goals are for the mission.
Any other questions?
We have a lot of debate about whether going back to Israel or going to some other country where there are Jews or a prior Jewish presence. Anybody want to speak to how you, I know how you can make the decision, but it's hard to get people to go every year to Israel or to not contemplate that. They've been there several times with us.
Well, we're planning, my name is Nick Vamalov and I'm
It's really all about providing a unique experience, in my opinion. And so for those members of the community who have never been to Israel before, or to provide them on a track of food and wine or culture, whatever it would be, as long as it's a unique experience, then I'd say, you know, continue on to Israel. But for example, on our most recent Morocco mission, because they had opportunities to do something they have never done before, it led them to different ideas. Some of them have never been to China to see the Jews of China. Now, certainly, they can go on a Talk tour or any of the others, but when you want to have that truly unique Jewish experience, then you come to Federation in order to make that happen.
Yeah, I would say in the past year in Nashville, We've had a Cuba trip, an Eastern European trip, and an Israel trip. And we're going with another Israel trip. But there's also something else I wouldn't ignore, and again, JFNA can provide resources. You know, consider, depending on what your location is, you know, a Washington mission, or combine Washington, New York, and Philadelphia. There are tremendous Jewish resources there, and for people that maybe don't want to travel overseas, here's an opportunity to give them a strong Jewish experience right in the United States.
Are there any other questions?
I'm going to add to that answer, because I think there's a couple points that weren't said. The key is, and it was said in the presentations, the key is leadership. It's not just about where do you think is an interesting place to go, but if you don't have the leadership that are going to recruit their friends, then it's, you know, we're not in the travel business. We're not a travel agency, and we should be very clear about what it is we're trying to do. We also don't want to take the same people every single time. You also want to make sure there are people that are mission junkies and love missions and are going to keep coming. But you need to find all of those new people, and you need the right leaders when you pick the place. Because if you just pick somewhere, and then I would say in terms of your question about Israel, it's seeing Israel from a different way. So for instance, JFNA this year has an LGBTQ mission to Israel. That's a very different way to see Israel for a very targeted, specific population with a leader that says, I'm going to go out and recruit those people. So you need the right formula of the right leadership, the right place, the right partner in a unique way that's going to achieve the goals that doesn't just make us in the travel business.
Michelle, did you have another question? Ronin?
The mission department in New York has a list of all the future missions that come. Usually we have a family mission, which is a national family mission. We haven't done that in the last recent years, but I just had a query this morning. Are we going to do a family mission this summer? So I think we might talk about that. However,
but we don't have the information about other communities. They work with different, you know, with different agents. We don't have one certain central place where we have information about, you know, specific communities doing family missions.
But I'm sure that if you approach the Fedwind or something like that, you just, you know, ask the question, that community will come back to you. What I wanted to mention, if you have one family in the major donors, then we are doing boutique visits for families.
I'd like to thank all of our participants. And Yuri, if you have any questions for him about the Israeli end of this, as well as Ronit and Tikva, they'll be happy to answer your questions. Go to Israel. Next year, everybody should have been in Jerusalem. And I thank you very much for your time. And don't forget, there's a list of national missions on this card. Take it with you.